Welcome to the Fastest 5 Minutes, presented by Kroll & Mooring. We are your co-hosts, Peter Ayer and David Robbins, bringing you a bi-weekly summary of significant government contracts, legal and regulatory developments that no government contracts lawyer or executive should be without. There are a few items of interest this week, and we start with a final rule focusing on IR&D. On August 24th, DOD issued a final rule, effective immediately, that walked back a DFARS requirement that major contractors must engage in a formal discussion referred to as a technical interchange with a DOD technical staff member prior to generating IR&D costs for IR&D projects initiated in fiscal year 2017 and later, in order for these costs to be allowable. So this was an issue that got all sorts of commentary and concern from industry because of the requirement to have these technical interchanges in order for these costs to be allowable. This change effectively eliminates that requirement for a technical interchange. So we revert back to the way things were before that rule. And that's going to be a welcome change for many in industry who have been quite critical of this. So an interesting and important development for contractors who engage in IR&D.
All right. Well, I guess I'll pick it up from there. And that restores the independent, the I, back into IR&D. That's what qualifies as a government contracts joke, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be here every 2 weeks. Tip your servers. Okay, moving on. Anti-terrorism training. In an unfortunate sign of the times, DOD issued a proposed rule to implement a requirement for an anti-terrorism program. That's going to require contractors who need routine physical access to federally controlled facility or military installations as a condition of the contract. All of those contractors must complete Level 1 anti-terrorism awareness training. The rule proposes to add a subpart to the DFARS that advises contracting officers of the training requirement, the authorized sources of training, and when training must be completed by contractors. As proposed, it would be required within 30 days of requiring access and annually thereafter, and it would contain flow-down requirements. Again, it's just an unfortunate sign of where we are now, and seems to be one of those fairly practical additions to the DFARS. Peter, back to you.
Another proposed rule to the DFARS that we want to bring to your attention, this relates to performance-based payments and progress payments. So last week, DOD issued a proposed rule to revise progress payments and performance-based policies for DOD contracts by amending the DFARS. There are several proposed changes. Here's the bottom line. The proposed amendments are intended to take an enterprise view of contractor performance and provide an opportunity for small and other than small entities to qualify for increased customary progress payments rates and maximum performance-based payments, but depending on whether the contractor has met certain criteria. So the proposed rule itself is many, many pages. It gets very deep into the weeds on standards, criteria, what has to be submitted, what the eligible adjustments are. Obviously, it's just proposed right now, but for companies that work significantly in a space where there are these types of progress payments, worth a closer look. And obviously, we're happy to answer any questions about that. And David, over to you.
Great. Thank you. And as we continue to track the various circuit courts' interpretation and implementation of the Supreme Court's decision in Escobar, in the False Claims Act case, the last couple of years, in late August, the Ninth Circuit affirmed the district court's denial of a defendant's motion for summary judgment in a QTAM action, alleging that the defendant violated an incentive compensation ban included in its agreement with the Department of Education. In denying the motion, the court held that the Escobar decision created a mandatory two-part test for False Claims Act liability in cases involving undisclosed regulatory noncompliance. The two-part test to establish falsity requires that the defendant made specific representations about the goods or services it provided and that the noncompliance was undisclosed, making those representations, quote, misleading half-truths, unquote. The court stated that it does not agree that Escobar requires the two-part test to establish liability under an implied false certification theory. However, because two previous Ninth Circuit decisions required satisfaction of Escobar's two conditions, the court was bound to hold that relators must satisfy those two conditions to prove falsity, and the relators did in this case, U.S. ex rel. Rose et al. V. Stevens Institute. And that's all for this edition. We'll see you again in 2 weeks. In the meantime, if you need anything, I can be reached at 624-2627 and Peter at 202-624-2807.
The Fastest 5 Minutes podcast is brought to you by Kroll & Mooring LLP. Subscribe on iTunes, and if you enjoy our show, please leave us a review. You can find more information at kroll.com/govconpodcast.